Good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. As we've done many times in the past years, we hold the TechNet at this time. As you often heard, main purpose of the TechNet is education. A little bit of a humor squeezes in there from time to time, but most of it's education. Entertainment, I guess I should have said. Clan of curious radio amateurs gather at this time, and they literally teach each other the art and science of wireless and radio equipment. The books in the schools do only a mediocre job of teaching it. The real hands-on experience comes from the guys that have got the passion to build those antennas, install them, and use them to talk to people, talk to each other with them. So if you want somebody to understand radio, you've got to hire a ham radio operator. We've often said that. The TechNet itself is roughly broken up into three sections. The first section, people sign in with their call letters and their name. They tell me, yes, they do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in just because you're listening. After 36 years of the TechNet, started in September of 1982, by now we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. We just assume that. So please only check in if you've got a question or a comment for the net. That's the first section. Roughly an hour's worth. Depending on enthusiasm, it can go shorter or longer than that. Second section is by Dr. Roy, AC2GS, who has what he calls a science talk. He's always got a nice long list of new science subjects and older science subjects. He also likes participation. So if you've got the slightest opinion for or against or whatever on any of the subjects discussed during Roy.
Repeater, timeout.
If you've got the slightest opinion during the science talk, please do chime in and let us know what you think. And there's nothing wrong with having a statement that's in error. And there were lots of people who were afraid to ask questions for fear that their question is too stupid. Don't worry about that. The dumbest question is the one that's most deserving of an answer. It represents the biggest difference between what the guy knows and what he would like to know. There's no such thing as a dumb question. We don't have that snooty attitude of, hey, you're not coming up to our level. The third section is by Paul WS2N with the space report. And he tells us what National Aeronautics and Space Administration and all the other space agencies around the world, what they're doing in space. Okay. We've already got checked in WA2RYY, Joe. I'm pretty sure John from Los Alamos, KC2SHO, is also signing in. You guys should remind me periodically to make sure that people who sign into the chat room who don't have the ability to talk to us directly with audio, that we check on the chat room. I don't have a chance to monitor the chat room. I'm pretty sure Roy does that. So Roy, break in periodically and tell us what the chat room is doing. Okay, at this time, let me drop. I'm going to do a little bit of checking. Okay, we've got both the Eastern and Western, and I'm presuming the IRLP and Echolink is working. If not, we'll hear about it pretty soon. So at this time, we're going to take check-ins from people who do have a question or comment. Wait for the beeps, and then give me your call letters, your name, because I'm so darn forgetful about names. But I like to refer to people by their name. And the word yes means you do have a question or comment. So people who can sign in with a question or comment, please do so right now after the beeps. K2RAW listening.
Julio has comments to Roy.
Okay, that was a double. I heard N2EO as part of the double. Who was the other person signing in at this time?
TJEX, yes. Mr. Bravo with a question. Bob in Brooklyn.
Okay, I heard blank TJEN and also Bob. Give me your prefix at GJE.
Kilo 2.
Okay, Kilo 2, GJE, Ed. And then the other person named Bob, please give me your call letters.
This is Bob, and I'm Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo.
Kilo Delta 2, November Victor Bravo. Okay, we got you, Bob. So far we have John, Joe, Rich, Ed, and Bob. Anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name right now. After the beeps.
2YYL. The name is Mike. If somebody can check on Echolink, I don't know if it's up.
Okay, that was blank YYL, Mike. Yeah. Checking on Echolink. Does anybody know if Echolink is working?
AC2GS, Echolink appears to be down.
Okay, that was Dr. Roy telling us Echolink is down right now. And Eric, if you're available, KE2EJ, yeah. Is there any further word on Echolink? Go ahead, Eric.
We're having a look right now. And if it's down, we'll bring it back up.
Okay, for the Echolink users, it looks like a repair is on the way. And Eric will be reporting that to us as soon as he finds out. I'll stand by and see what Eric finds out. I think it was John, KC2SHO, that earlier was signing in by Echolink, so that Echolink was apparently working 10 minutes or so ago. Yep. Any further word, Eric?
You're going to have to wait a little bit. Takes a minute to log in.
Roger, Dodger.
John logged in from IRLP. I think one way or another, Echolink's been kind of flaky for the last week.
Okay, I think that was Roy. Did I also hear John in there? KC2SHO, was I hearing you, John?
The guy signed in via IRLP, not Echolink.
Okay, you're signing in by IRLP. Okay, I'm pretty sure I heard you earlier. You quite possibly have a question, and we also love hearing about what's going on in Los Alamos. So tell us anything you want or ask anything you want, John. KC2SHO, K2LIW. Go ahead, John.
Well, I didn't sign in with a question, but I'll tell you what, if you get through the group you have, maybe I'll have one by the time you get there, or maybe I'll have read some news on Los Alamos. I'm just sitting down to the computer now. So if you want, give a call on me then. If you don't, no big deal either. K2IWKC2SHO.
Very fine, John. Looking forward to hearing from you, and we'll call you back a little bit later. Joe, W2RYY. How are those electrons on the south shore of Long Island treating you this week? W2RYY, K2RYW, got it, Joe.
Good evening, Dick. W2RYY here. Question is this. What are smart lights, and how do they work?
Okay. Your question is so brief, and I missed a key word. What is blank, and how do they work? The missing word, spell it out for us as to what you're really asking, Joe. Go ahead.
Blank is back up. The question again is, what are smart lights and how do they work?
Okay, Eric, I think you just reported that Echolink is back up. Is that true, Eric? Now, here I'm not sure, but I'm going to make a guess that they have been for some time talking about automobiles that can communicate with each other. The light-emitting diodes that are starting to be used on automobiles have the ability to be turned on and off in microseconds and maybe nanoseconds. So there's various ways you can be flashing the light so darn fast that the human eye doesn't know it. You think the light is completely steady, but yet a pulse code modulation or any other kind of digital-like information could be transmitted from automobile to automobile by way of lights. That's one possible explanation of what smart lights might be. Hopefully you guys have got a lot more information than I do on this. If so, give me your call letters right now about smart lights. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Smart lights, as in lights used in your home, that you can change the brilliance and apparently change the color. I wasn't talking about stuff in automobiles at all.
I think Joe is talking about something along the lines of Philips Hue smart lights.
Give us some words on that, Roy. Go right ahead.
Okay, I don't own any of them, but they're LEDs that have red, green, and blue coloration, and they can be adjusted for different hues remotely. They connect either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and you connect a little control device and operate the lights from a cell phone or any kind of cell phone app to the controller, and that controls the bulbs. Some technologies don't require the controller. You do it through an app directly. But it's controllable, color-correcting, and intensity-adjustable light-emitting diodes these days.
That sounds like a nice home appliance. I think you said Philips is one of the brand names. Are there other brand names? Where have you read about these, Roy? Roughly how expensive? And are they Internet of Everything? In other words, are they connected by wireless techniques as well as maybe wired? So give us some information along those lines, Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW in the tech tab.
Well, the biggest sellers that I'm aware of is Philips. They made marketing claims, and they sell groups of them with a controller. Again, you can operate them through an app on any kind of a cell phone. You can probably even do it remotely these days. I don't own one. My nephew owns one. He loves it. He changes the color in his rooms to go for what he's doing. If he's playing a game or something, he'll change the color and do things like that. I have light-emitting diodes, and I have relatively smart fixtures in that they're wired. And so over a wired connection, I can adjust intensity and light and turn them on and off. I can't change my color, but I don't really find the need to change a color. So mine is a more wired, there's Insteon, there's about five or six different wired and semi-wireless protocols. And then the next generation up, the smarter ones are things like Philips U-Smart. There's different prices. They're kind of on the pricey side still. They were much more expensive, but they've gone down a little bit. But they're not anywhere close to the lower price that LED light bulbs have dropped to, because you know, Philips kind of owns the patent on a lot of them, and they do a few extra tricks that I'm not quite sure if it's necessary.
A very basic question I've got is, what kind of lighting are we talking about here? Direct or indirect lighting? Are these floor lamps, tabletop lamps, ceiling lamps, hidden lamps behind furniture? And when you say pricey, I guess we're talking about an installation for a living room that might be hundreds of dollars. But obviously, when mass production starts going, and when they catch on, the price will be coming down. And do you get enough, are we getting enough lumens to make the room bright, so to speak? Is this mood lighting, or is this full brilliance lighting? Any of those questions that you have any information on, Roy, go ahead. AC2GS, K2RIW.
Okay, they're basically just glorified intelligent light bulbs. You pick the number that you want. They look to me as though they're approximately the equivalent of maybe a 50 or a 60 watt incandescent. And depending upon the number of bulbs that you can plug into either a lamp or a ceiling fixture, you can get pretty decent illumination. You can choose white, and that's a good all-around illumination. Or if you want just kind of a little red or a little blue or a little green, you can drop the intensity down a couple of notches and just get a little background ambiance. They go for, I think, something along the lines of $50 a bulb. I might be off a little bit on it. And you usually get them in sets so that a controller comes with them.
Okay, it sounds like it's a smart or elaborate bulb that I buy and plug into my typical socket of a lighting fixture, and the controller you buy, does it talk to that light bulb wirelessly, or does the controller in some way connect to the twisted pair that goes to the actual lamp itself? Back to you, Roy, K2IW.
These type of devices are more consumer friendly than the way I have my house rigged. So they're all wireless. Basically, there's a small box about the size of, say, two packs of cigarettes, and that's the wireless connection to the light bulbs. Amazon sells a four bulb starter kit for about $144. So it's certainly a lot more expensive than a generic dimmable LED bulb. But you know, if you need all that flash, it's still available. But you pay a premium.
Sure, Jay. Okay. I think it was KE2EJ. Go right ahead, Eric.
The line of products he's talking about is called Hue, H-U-E. Philips Hue is actually, it was an afterthought because Philips Lighting, Central Lighting, if you look at the Empire State Building and many other buildings that actually have computer-controlled lighting, it's out of that division of Philips and out of that technology, they created this line of lighting products, which also includes voice control. You can actually activate some of the lights by just talking to it. But, you know, it's not exactly cheap, but in the world of reality, it's not that expensive either. Single units can be as cheap as, you know, $25-$30. I think they even have white ones that are just simple control and Bluetooth and Wi-Fi for like $15 a piece. So there you go. K2IW, K2J, that's my 2 cents.
Okay, this question I'm going to ask to Eric and Roy in that order. The controller that comes with these smart bulbs, what kind of range does it have? Obviously, if I'm sitting in the living room controlling the lights in the living room, no problem. Can I sit in the living room, control the lights in the dining room and the kitchen that's beyond? In other words, I can sit in the living room and realize that, hey, I'm not going to be in the kitchen for a while, and even though I can't see the kitchen, can I turn out the lights at that range? So, over to you, Eric, first. If you happen to know anything about the range of the controller, KE2EJ, K2IW.
Okay, K2IW, K2J. You're talking about typical ranges of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, actually a little bit less. From what I understand, the power is a little bit less. So, you know, you're talking like 50, 60 feet in that neighborhood. I'm sure Roy probably has some more comments on that, but it's, you know, it's got to be within FCC rules.
And that controller itself, is that running on two or three AAA or AA batteries? What's your guess as to how the controller is working? Or does some of them even claim rechargeable power supply inside? Over to you on that one, Eric.
ACC with a comment.
Well, I don't own the product, so I really can't answer that. I can actually look into it. But I'm sure Roy must know, or the other station that just broke in. Maybe he has an answer for you.
Yeah, I'm going to go to him first. It sounded like AC2C with a comment. Go right ahead. Correct me on your call letters and your name, sir.
Hey, Dick. KD2HUC. Name is Steve. The ones that I have in my house, they don't require the use of a controller. They're Wi-Fi enabled. They run off the regular power of the socket. And they are connected to a server, I guess, that the manufacturer runs. So they're actually enabled through the internet. So even though the local range only exists, you know, to Wi-Fi, you can operate them from around the globe as long as you have an internet connection and a smart device. KD2HUC, back to net.
Thank you, Steve. Good information. Let's see what Roy's got to add to all of this. And by the way, after this subject, I'm going to go back to you for a quick question, Steve. Something I heard you say a couple of days ago that I wanted a little more information on. AC2GS, K2IW. Go ahead on smart lights, Roy.
Well, it's a large term for a number of different capable units, but the big one is the Philips Hue. That one, the controller is a plug-in. It's not battery-powered, so you have to plug it in someplace. My understanding, again, I don't own one. My nephew does, that it won't light up the entire house. You have to have them close by. You can have them adjoining rooms or maybe one room over, but you know, most people, I don't think, have a controller that operates the entire house for them. I could be wrong, but I've never got that idea. It's a rather short range. You know, I would something like 50 feet to 100 feet on a good day.
I do have some of these, so I have a comment as well. KC2SHO.
Okay, glad to hear from you, John. Go right ahead, John. And by the way, since at least the version that Roy was talking about does not run on batteries, it plugs in, it sounds to me like it could be carrier current communication. In other words, you're plugging it into a 110-volt socket, and through that socket and through the wiring of the house, it's sending the information that gets to the bulb. That's a guess on my part. KC2SHO, Los Alamos, K2RIW in the TechNet. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, one of my comments was going to be what Roy just said, that, yeah, that's a general term for a little bit wider range than just color-changing LEDs. And there's actually a lot of players, and as you can imagine, there's a ton of options from China as well on these smart bulb things. And mine does require a hub. It does not use the Wi-Fi for... You can connect the hub to Wi-Fi, but I decided to hardwire my hub. Just, you know, to me, the more devices you have on Wi-Fi, you can start to limit your performance in Wi-Fi if you decide to go with a large installation. So you may want to consider something that uses a hub. That way you're sort of offloading some of that density and traffic, if you will, you know, from the Wi-Fi system. I went with a brand called Senglid, but there are a bunch out there. GE, Philips, I'm just going through a list here. There's a popular one called LifeX, and Hive, and Senglid, there's mine. There's an interesting product called NanoLeaf, and you can get a smart on-off dimmable pretty cheap. You can get a starter pack with like two bulbs and a hub, fairly cheap. But if you want the color-changing, hue-altering type bulbs, then yeah, I think you're going into another level. But anyway, to wrap it up, for me, the furthest light from mine is maybe 100 feet away, and the signal's just barely there. It actually tells you the signal, and it does not use the home wiring. It's wireless. K2RIW, KC2SHO.
Good, John. Thank you, John. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, the method of control is not through the carrier, not carrier current, through the power. All the products use Zigbee, interestingly enough, which is a low-power two-way transceiver on a chip with digital control.
2OIS.
K2OIS. Sounds like Oboe Yankee Sierra. Correct me on that and give us your name. Go right ahead with your comment, sir.
It's KC2 Oscar India Sierra. My name is Mark. I don't know how you want to do it in your place, but in my place, I have LED bulbs in my three-way lamp, a three-way switch. You could get a three-way LED bulb if you wanted to, but you don't have to. And I use Lutron's Cassetta setup. What it does is I have a little desktop remote control that sits next to me, and the lamp itself plugs into the wall, into the device, and it goes wireless. Use this, before you come home, you can turn your lights off, turn your lights on. Somebody's in your house, you can turn your lights on and off, scare them out, I don't know. Tell them there's a ghost in there. But you can do it wirelessly on your device. Over to you.
So it sounds like by way of internet-like connection, in other words, with my of my iPhone while I'm miles away. I think I could be communicating with the system that you're just describing, Mike. It sounds like that. Roughly how expensive? And are you just turning on and off and dimming those lights, or do you also have a version of that where you can be adjusting the hue? Kilo Charlie 2, Oboe India Sierra, K2RAW. Go ahead, Mark.
No, I just have a regular dimmable, not regular, but it's a dimmable LED bulb. I believe it's a Philips, if I'm not mistaken. Bulb itself, just a straight bulb. And it comes with the little dimming device, like your little desktop thing. You could dim it, set it where you want, you can turn it off, turn it up, all wirelessly. And the lamp itself would plug into, if you're using a lamp, it could plug into the wall. They also have other devices that you can use. The cassette, you can use them in your recess lights also, if you have recess lights. And like I say, you can do this wirelessly on your iPhone. You can look it up on the internet. It's, what I'm using is Cassetta by Lutron.
AC2GS.
Go right ahead, Roy.
The big division here, as I see it, with so-called smart light bulbs and such, is that some of them have the electronics and most of the control mechanisms in the bulb, so all you do is you screw out the old light bulb, you screw in the new light bulb, and most of the control takes place at that level. What Mark was talking about, and it's somewhat similar to my Insteon, you have to rewire things unless you go through a lamp. If you go through a lamp, you just use a little dimming box and control box between the lamp and the power connection. But otherwise, if you want to do that for the fixtures, you end up having to do a minor little electrician's job of replacing the switch with a control mechanism in the load wiring itself.
That goes over to the your switch box where your dimmer would be.
You have to wire that new dimmer in.
You have to wire it to a switch anyway, so it's going to the same thing. It doesn't matter. You wire it to the wall box, switch box on the wall. Wherever all the lights go, whatever's on that switch will be able to be controlled by the Lutron dimmer.
The rewiring we're now talking about, does that extra fixture for the rewiring sit on the outside of the switch box? Or is it so compact that you can actually squeeze it inside of the box itself? Over to you on that one first, Roy. AC2GS, K2IW.
Most of these smart electrical systems are designed so that they're smaller than the switch box. So I swapped out the regular manual switches in my switch boxes for Insteon controllers that have a direct interface that they'll dim up, they'll dim down, they'll fast up, fast down. You can preset them to stop at a certain point, and I can either send through a carrier wave or through the power source or through wireless itself, two different modes to control it, but you have to do a little bit of electrician's job for that.
These smart lighting fixtures that we're now describing, are they so special that you have to buy them by the internet, or are they so common that I can walk into Home Depot and buy them? So, the people who are purchasing these things, what's your guess, anybody who wants to answer, give me your call letters. Where is the average person buying them these days? K2IW?
K2OIS. Probably the Apple has the bulbs.
Amazon has it too. It depends upon how esoteric you want to get. There are more commercial products than there are less commercial products.
So Apple and Amazon, among others, have them. They're not so popular yet that I just walk into a Home Depot store and walk over to the right shelf. Is that what you guys are saying? Go ahead, Eric.
If you walk into Home Depot, you go to where they have light bulbs, you will find them.
By the way, most people are not aware that dimmers for LEDs, first of all, there are LED bulbs that are not dimmable. And they don't say dimmable. And there are LED bulbs that are dimmable. And as time went on, because what we call a dimmer, what the LED stands for, dimming, are two different things. The conventional dimmers, the older dimmers for incandescent bulbs, generally will not work on dimmable LED bulbs because they're looking for a pulseless modulated pulse, actually, to tell the circuitry in the bulb what to do about dimming, not chopping the entire AC up like it does in a conventional dimmer. That's one thing. Let me drop. The stuff that's magical, the neuron stuff is actually for wired dimmable LED bulbs of various different kinds. The magic stuff, like the Philips Hues, use something called Zigbee. If you ever have done any kind of wireless stuff, even in QST, there are a couple of Zigbee controllers there. The guy wanted to see what was coming out of the port, the 232 port of the radio on his car, but he wanted to do it with his computer inside, so he made up a pair of Zigbee devices that did the serial connection for it. Zigbee comes in three different flavors. It comes in the 900 megahertz region. It comes in the 800 megahertz region for overseas. And typically we use it in 2.4 gigs. It's actually 802.15, rather, which is the actual protocol of the physical layer and the link layer of the data that is transmitted. It also has carrier sense and multiple collision avoidance, so you see how sophisticated it is. But the simple wired dimmable stuff, which is basically a dimmer. By the way, let me add a drop again. Dimmers need a power supply of sorts. And you'll find where a lot of installations in homes, especially where it's Romex, where a light switch basically is a series break in a line of one side of the line. You need to have a power supply, so what they do is you hook up to the ground of the box, and these devices have to draw less than, I think it's 20 milliamps or 18 milliamps to be distributed out there, so there's other little things to think about, but that's just kind of the way things are. K2RIW, K2J.
In the old days, a dimmer really was a kind of a silicon-controlled rectifier, which chopped up the sine wave. And so portions of the sine wave were missing, and when you've got a purely resistive incandescent bulb, that works very well. The average power you give it has got something to do with how much light you get out of it. It's not a linear relationship, but when it comes to these new fancy electronic bulbs, you got to be careful about that. So when it comes to dimmable and non-dimmable bulbs, you got to be sure you buy them correctly. Now, when it comes to all of the fancy modulation of the waveform going to the bulb, or when it comes to Zigbee or 802.11 or any of these other wireless techniques, the other thing we've got to worry about is electromagnetic interference. Andy, W-A-2-C-D-L, had some fairly modern lighting in his shop in his basement, which was making a tremendous amount of noise on his HF radio, like 80 and 40 meters, as I remember, was, or maybe 20 meters, was being wiped out. So instances where these fancy lighting fixtures do what you want, but they get the side effect of making a lot of electromagnetic interference. Anybody got any words on all of the above? Give me a call at us right now. This is your IW and the Tech Man.
Okay, C2OYS.
Go right ahead, Mark.
So, I'm using, well, it's up all the way now, but I don't hear any hum or anything on my radio. I don't think you guys hear anything. If you want, I can dim it right now, and I could bring it down, and I still don't hear anything. It's dimming to go off, just turned off, so, I mean, there's nothing here. But basically what all this stuff is if you get a, depends on the fixture that you do have, manufacturer will tell you what type of dimmer you can use.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout, cancel.
There's more to this. It's pretty deep.
rabbit hole, and I would like to clear something up, KC2SHO.
Okay, we'll get to you in a second, John. Mark, you didn't wait for the beeps, and 85% of everything you gave us was timed out on the 8-5 machine. We still heard you coming through the eastern machine, but on the western machine, because you didn't wait for the beeps and you timed out, we missed an awful lot of that. So please repeat everything beyond the first two sentences, if you know what I mean, Mark. KC2OIS, wait for the beeps, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Roger that. Sorry about that, guys. Waste your time. Alright, so you could get, like, a lot of these things that then the lights you put up on your ceiling and stuff, they're LEDs. Manufacturer will tell you what type to use. Some of them use standard dimmers, and some of them use CL-type dimmers. And, like, I, you know, well, I used to be in the lighting business, so, you know, sell this stuff all the time. And they have a place in New Jersey, they're called, the company's called Amerlux. Let me let it drop, I don't want to time out. And you can get Amerlux, you could buy them with either electronic or standard dimming. All right, it's all in the driver, you order it the way you want to. Okay, and then you just, you can use a standard dimmer to dim your LED recess lights. Also, there's another company, which is made in the States also. They cost a little, they cost more money. The Amerlux cost about $250. And Element is another company. They're made out in Chicago. And all these companies, they work all basically the same way. Element does make a cheaper line. Run you about $200, $150 to $200. So something to think about if you're changing your lighting in the house and how you're going to dim it. The Lutron will work with all these things, and it is wireless, and you can use turn your lights on before you get home, like this time of the year. Over to you, Dick.
82 FIU.
FIU recognized, but John comes first. Thank you, Mark. Lots of good information there. KC2SHO, K2RIW, go ahead.
Jay, you forgot me.
Did Eric there, did you want to get him first?
Okay, somebody said we forgot him. Who was that?
It was me. K2J. I did want to say a couple things, is that the Lutron device is pretty much these what the rest of the world follows in terms of standard dimmable LED bulbs. The one thing that I wanted to say was that Andy's problem was the switching supplies and the ballast, the ballast replacements for the fluorescence. That things make a racket, but the stuff that's running the LEDs, the Zigbee stuff being 2.4 gigs or even the 900 megahertz stuff, that's not going to bother you. Within the, you know, the Part 15 rules in terms of making spurious stuff. Some of the early Chinese stuff was really bad. They were like transmitters, whatever, the switching supplies that they used to make the DC supply for the bulb itself were very simple, one capacitor, choppers, and you put a spectrum analyzer in there and you see the darn thing lights up from one end of the world to the other. But the new stuff from the reputable manufacturers are pretty much RF quiet, so it's not as big a deal as it used to be. K2RIW, K2J.
Hi, thank you, Eric. John, you're next, and after that it's going to be George. KC2SHO in Los Alamos, K2RIW. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, thanks, Dick. Who would have thunk so much talk about LED bulbs, but I think we got off... We got off subject a bit, you know, the dimmable and just the LED replacements. I wouldn't lump those in the smart LED bulb category or just smart lighting category. The bulbs I have, for example, the dimmer is internal. The application or your voice control, if you have it linked to something like Alexa, for example, which I have, is what allows you the control of that. Doesn't matter what you plug it into as long as it does not have a dimmer. I do not believe you could connect them to any standard dimmer, whether it's an LED
capable or not. The other comment I wanted to make was that with all these different brands and the connection to them, because you're using a login and password you created on their app or their website, if you do want to use different brands and try them out, you end up with a different app for each one. Kind of makes sense. It's kind of the way it, I guess it's got to be. But then if you want to use it with something like Google Home or with the Amazon Echo, you have to link all these accounts together, and it kind of, you know, for a guy like me who's done all these years, you know, playing with electronics and making things work in different ways, it's kind of annoying to have an account and link all these accounts together instead of maybe one sort of smart home controller that uses one standard or technology, if you will. Let me know if that makes sense. It almost seems like going backwards to me, but in a way that the manufacturer secures future business with you. Why should I go buy a GE option now if I've got to get another account, another password, and link that, and then another app, and a different way of managing it? So think about that. K2IW, KC2SHO.
If I understand you correctly, John, before a person starts buying any of this equipment, I guess you want to study it a little bit, look at the big picture, figure out how much compatibility you've got between controllers and bulbs and apps, and how many applications you're going to have to be loading into your iPhone. So I think you're saying a smart person has to study what combination he's likely to buy before he starts writing the check. Is that sort of what you're saying, John? KC2SHO, K2LAW on the TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, that's right. And the compatibility is zero. It works with that manufacturer only. Full stop.
So a person who thinks he's buying a workable system, but he's mixing brand names, there's a fair number of places where he can get himself in trouble, and he might not have compatibility. I think that's what you're saying, John. Go ahead.
The compatibility issue is that it's an Internet of Things device, and you need their app, you need their password and login. So it's not saying that I could buy every brand that I want, and if it's compatible with Echo or Google Voice or Google Home, you're going to be fine. It's just to manage each one and set it up independent of once you have it linked to your smart home system. That is what's independent. That is what is not compatible, because you have to use their website or their app and that username and password for that. So you can imagine if you had 20 brands of things, you'd need a spreadsheet with 20 usernames and passwords. Go ahead.
D2OYS.
Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, you are using Lutron. You can use Chinese bulb, American bulb, any bulb you want. It'll work with it. Okay, you get their app, and you put it onto your device, period. That's it. I never had to log into anything. That's the way that one works. You're talking about a different, like the U-bulb or something that's electronic that works within itself and its own system. Yeah, then you have to have a thousand different things. But in general, you could dim your lamps in your living room. You could dim your recess lights, the lights in the bathroom. You can hook it up to everything. And each one could be a different manufacturer, and it doesn't matter.
Okay, thank you for that information. Now, here's a very patient guy who's been waiting to get his edge in word-wise. George, KD2FIU, go right ahead. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. There we go, there's the beep. Yeah, basically two questions here. You raised the question that was coming to me, and before I wanted to break in here, is what effect does it have on the amateur radio bands that we are privileged to work, or even commercial radio bands. Let's say NF AM radio and things like that. I heard responses that, well, it's in my room right now and it's not affecting me. Well, that's VHF. Low-mid VHF, 146, let's say. I'm not confident. What is that going to do with mid-frequency and HF in general, or especially lower HF, because I find most interference comes in on MF and the lower HF from located... let me let it drop. From local devices. And another thing is, why fying every little device that we need to control everything? It seems like that's a very cheap way out for manufacturers to give us new devices to control with. So the first question is, where are we with the amateur bands, especially most of it, which has not been cleared up with your initial question, Dick? And, you know, what are we doing? And by the way, a lot of stuff is made in Europe, which is at 50 hertz AC. So, different world.
AC2GS?
I recognize. I'm going to put in a couple of words here first. Let me get a beep. Yeah, George brings up a good point. A 2-meter rig and a 450 rig, when it comes to radio frequency interference, they're reasonably bulletproof for a couple of reasons. One, most kinds of radio interference is pulse-like in nature, and it falls off 6 dB per octave as you go up in frequency. So the amount of noise you're making at 146 megs or 440 megs is a hell of a lot less. Equipment down at 80 and 40 and 20 meters is a lot more vulnerable. So whether or not any of these fancy controllers will affect your HF equipment, it's something to consider a little bit. It's beginning to sound like the alarm we had with Andy, the B2CDO, was due to his fluorescent solid-state ballast equipment was making that noise, and it wasn't these fancy controllers. I think it was George who wanted to give us some further word. No, that was Mark, AC2OIS. Go ahead, Mark, K2IW.
Ben has to pick up the mic, but like I said, this doesn't interfere with my signal, because you don't hear anything on my signal, so it's not interfering with my signal. That's all I got to say.
WS2N.
Before we pick up on Paul, I've been keeping Roy here. AC2GS, go ahead, Roy.
Okay, thank you, Dick. I'll just tell you from what I've experienced. I mean, I've been kind of playing around with the concept for decades when all I had available was a protocol X10, which was noisy itself. It could pick up lots of things. I then moved on to Insteon about 15 years ago, and I've never had any particular problem. And as I mentioned, my nephew, who lives right one floor above me, is closer to my antennas than I am. And I operate HF and I operate VHF, and he's never complained that lights blink or such, and I've never heard noises coming from his U-Philips. So I think most of these things, the older ones operate at something like 900 megahertz, and the newer ones operate at 2.4 gigahertz. So none of them are operating on HF frequencies.
2FIU. Okay, yeah. We'll pick you up, George, right after Paul. WS2N, go right ahead, Paul. We got to keep things in order. You got it, Paul.
Very good. Good evening, Dick. And, yeah, to what George is saying, AM radio, of course, if the radio is right on top of the light, it's going to make a difference. I have a transistor radio in my room, and, you know, I have AM on now, so, you know, all I do is put on an LED light, you know, standard LED, this is what happens.
You know, I mean, it definitely interferes with, but if I move it a foot or two away, no problem. You know, it's pretty good, but it's not perfect.
And do know that almost every situation of a radio frequency interference usually is curable once you find out what is the point of egress, ingress, and so on. And by separating, by filtering, by shielding, there's all kinds of ways of usually making the thing compatible. I think George, KD2FIU, I think you had some further comments. George, go ahead.
Yeah, I still haven't heard what anybody's experiences are with the lighting systems that started this entire segment. Experiences with those lighting systems are on NF and HF. Another thing is, John, thanks for joining for Los Alamos. Like to hear from you, but you got a nasty, nasty noise coming in with your signal. And it's been like that every time you come in. It's the same noise in the last few weeks. Do you know what it is? And before I ask for experiences on MF and HF, John, are you aware of that noise?
I don't think I'm hearing that noise. John, give us the transmission. I don't think I'm hearing it. KC2SHO, K2RIW. Wait for the beeps and go right ahead, John.
Stop it. But he's preventing it from happening. He's got a motorboating noise on his signal, Vic.
Of course, when you asked that, I switched to the handheld as I was walking through the house. So I'm on a different rig now, but yeah, I do believe I get something here in the shack because my RLP node's a little exposed to the environment. And I've moved it a few times, so I probably need to do a RLP echo reflector test. So thanks for the info. I'll get that straightened out. KC2SHO.
I was so happy to hear from John that I didn't even hear the noise, even though it used to be there. That last transmission, I think, was clean. Do you comply with that one, George? Go ahead.
Clean had better audio than...
Say better audio on the handheld?
Well, a nice clean audio and no motorboating on that last transmission, so it looks like he knows how to pin that down. Now, in the case of these smart lighting, is the general subject that Joe brought up to us. Anybody have any further comments? And when it comes to being interference-free, make sure that we do keep an ear out for anybody with an HF rig, 80, 40, 20, 15 meters, much more vulnerable to certain kinds of interference, radio frequency interference, EMI, than the more bulletproof 2-meter and 450 rigs. So, and with any further comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now after the beeps. K2RIW.
K2FIU.
K2SHO.
Okay, so we've got George and John in that order. Go ahead, George.
Thank you, Dick. And not only HF, also interested in MF. You know, 1.8, well, actually below 3, down to even 550 KC that we listen to AM radio with. And from what I understand, AM radio and MF is still the biggest media in the country, or at least those stations on AM say that repeatedly.
Understand, George. Go ahead, John. SHO, you got it, John.
I hear some constant keying going on, so I need to walk up here, make sure I see that my light is lit on the node, but I'll keep talking in the meantime. Looks like I have it captured. Yeah, real quick, just a comment on the... I think we're getting mixed up again. The original subject was smart LEDs, right? So a smart LED means that the circuitry connected to the LED controls it in some way, dimming, color, stuff like that. When the other gentleman, I'm sorry, I forget his name and his call now, I'm not that close to notepad and that kind of thing, and I'm bouncing around the house. When he talks about the Lutron system, that is a smart switch. Of course you can use any bulb with that. And if you decide to put some smart switches or smart wall plugs all around the house all by the same manufacturer, yeah, that's going to make your life a lot easier. You can plug something right into the wall and plug the lamp into that, and then you can put any LED you want. But what I decided to do is buy the actual bulbs, and that's where the difference is going to come in if you don't buy all the same brand of bulbs, because then the smart bulb itself becomes the switch and the controller. So, yeah, there's a lot to think about if you want to do it. I could buy smart wall switches, and then I don't have to wire one into the switchblade in the house, but I do plan to do some of that. But in that way, then you could use any LED bulb you want. But if you have something else that doesn't allow you the option of just plugging something in, like I have wall sconces, for example, you either have to replace the switch or put a smart bulb in it. Go ahead.
Good information. In the late 1800s, Thomas Alva Edison, the so-called inventor of the light bulb, can you imagine if he heard this discussion today compared to what he had to put up with a carbonized string as the filament for an incandescent light bulb? We've come a long way. Light-emitting diodes have got efficiencies and longevity that's just out of sight compared to the early bulbs. And with any further questions or comments on all of the above, give me a call. That is right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KG2RY.
I think it was KG2 Kilo Golf 2 Romeo Yankee. Go right ahead. Start off with your name. I think I should know you.
QSL Dick. I hope you're having a wonderful evening so far. Name here is David. I was listening to this conversation, it made me think of a photo light that I have, which is round, made up of LEDs. It has a dimmer on it, and it has a control that goes from very warm color, like almost red, to very cool, like white color, to blue color. And it's designed for photographic use. Just thought I'd share that with you. KG2RY.
Yeah, I think your website does show an awful lot of photographic display. So I think you're saying that those who are in the commercial business of taking fancy photographs, I think you're saying that there's a kind of illuminator you can buy which has a rather deep control of its hue, everything from red to everything from very soft to very hard, bluish all the way down to reddish. I think that's what you're describing. I think you're saying, do commercial photographers use that? Is that a popular thing, David? And roughly how expensive is that? KG2RY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW from KG2RY. Yes, Dick, it's a pretty commonly used light source, probably more for movie making than for photography. These devices have been around maybe 5, 6, 7 years, I think. I've had mine. I have a couple of different kinds. One of them I bought about 3 years ago on eBay, Chinese made, and it has a special Sony battery on the back that's rechargeable, so it runs on batteries. Probably 2 or 3 hours of constant use. Back to you, sir.
And roughly how expensive, David, go ahead.
Well, that one was like $40. Go ahead.
Wow. I didn't expect it to be that inexpensive. And does this give a whole lot of light? Or in other words, I don't think I could light up a whole room with this. Would I just light up a tabletop, so to speak? David, go ahead.
USL, Dick, I'd say probably for a tabletop or a portrait. Go ahead.
Okay, enough for a portrait, but not enough to light up the whole room. And I presume there are
thin lithography situations where you would use quite a large number of these to light up a scene. Is that true, David?
I think it is, Dick. I think you would probably just use large